Om sahana bhavatu, sahana bhunaktu, sahadiryam karavavahai, tejasvinavaditamastu ma vidvishavahai. Om shanti shanti shanti. Yavat swadeha daham saha, naratvam naiva munchati, naratvam naiva munchati, yavat aradda deham syat, yavat aradda deham syat, na bhasatva vimochanam, na bhasatva vimochanam, yavat swadeha daham saha, naratvam na eva muchati, yavat aradha deham syat, na abhasatva vimochanam. More on the Chidabhasa and Jnanam. It says, Yavat is giving us a drishtanta as an illustration. Yavat, as long as, until one's body is burned, okay? Yavat swadeha, one's body, daham, until the burning of one's body, death. Saha, that person, naratvam na eva munchati. That person is not liberated from being a human being. As long as one has a body, you are a human being. As long as the body is there. Very simple. Everybody knows it. Okay? So, similarly, yavat aradda deham syat na abhasatva vimochanam. Abhasatva vimochanam. It says, similarly, as long as the deha, the body, is fructifying via prarabdha, the arabdha deha, this body, which has now been born and will continue on through one's life from birth until death because of the prarabdha karma, the karmas that caused you to take this body. So as long as this body is here due to the prarabdha karma, he says, the abhasatva vimochanam, there is no liberation, no vimochana from the abhasa, from the chidabhasa. Right? So what this means is, this kind of clears up some things that often are doubted among some of the yogis who feel that even though you're seeing, you're not seeing, hearing, you're not hearing, because they've misinterpreted some of these verses. So even though I'm here, you see me here, but I don't see you. Right? You hear me talking, but I don't see, I'm not experiencing anything. So they take it literally. But actually, just as long as this body is alive, for a jnani or an ajnani, as long as the body is alive, I have a body. Right? As long as the body is living out from its birth to death, and I have sense organs and a mind, the chidabhasa is there, right? Chidabhasa means that sense of being a knower, the sense of being an enjoyer, and the reality of it. In this sense, this level of reality, I have eyes, and those eyes are seeing. So I am a seer. From the standpoint of the chidabhasa, from the standpoint of the upadhi, I am a seer. I am a hearer. I am a thinker. I am a feeler. From the standpoint of the mind, I'm a thinker, I'm a feeler. From the standpoint of the eyes, I am a seer, I am a hearer. This experience is there for the jnani as well as the ajnani. It's not that the jnani gains knowledge and realizes I am the satchitatma, and so therefore the atma doesn't hear, the atma doesn't see, and so therefore I'm not hearing and then I'm not seeing. This is what is being negated here. As long as the body is running its course through one's prarabdha, all of your faculties continue to work. The chidabhasa is there as long as the sukshma sharira is there, as long as the sattva is there. If we look at it even... Okay. As I saw Chuck looking at this, it's just junk mail. As long as the Sukshma Sharira is, as long as the subtle body is there, right, which has taken this physical body, the subtle body reflects consciousness, the sattva, rajas, and tamas, the sattva and the subtle body reflects consciousness, that means the mind, and the sense organs by their nature reflect consciousness. That is the chidabhasa. Because the mind reflects consciousness, then identifying with the consciousness reflected in the mind, right? That the ahankara identifying with the consciousness reflected in the mind, then I become the knower, and the objects of the vrittis in the mind become the known, right? Both are just consciousness. It's consciousness plus the vritti, right? Consciousness plus the object of the vritti. The consciousness reflected in the vritti give this knower known illusion, whereas in actuality there's just one consciousness there. That sense of knowership will be there as long as the Sukshma Sharira is there, as long as the subtle body is there. Now, what's interesting, to just get a, more and more of a feel for this chidabhasa, even if you think in terms of dream or in terms of your imagination, the great percentage of things in the dream do not reflect consciousness. What reflects consciousness are the living beings, whether they be plants, or whether they be insects, or animals, or human beings. Those reflect consciousness. The others are just known. Unless we go to the whole Sameshti as Ishwara. The whole reflects consciousness, but that's the Sameshti Upadhi, that's the Ishwara Upadhi. But from within the Ishwara Upadhi, we can divide the creation that's being experienced into knower and known. So I am a knower, the rug is known. Or I am a knower, you are known. I am a knower, you are known. Your body is known. What allows the knowership is what we call the sattva, the sukshma sharira, the chidabhasa, that reflection of consciousness. And so now what he's saying is that as long as you have this upadhi, this body, as long as this body, which is your jnani, you have self-knowledge, but this, as long as this body is here living itself out, you will have that sense of knowership, enjoyership, because the chidabhasa is there. And at the same time, as you have the experience of knowership, enjoyership, you have your own self, which is not knowing and which is not enjoying, and that is what the siddha, that is self-evident also. At this moment, you can say, I'm not doing anything, and I see you. And it's not that I'm not doing anything, I'm not, as I can say. I can say, as with aparoksha jnana, I am not doing anything, I am not seeing anything, I am not enjoying anything, I am just the sit-chit-ananda, which is my own being. That's aparoksha. I've recognized that, I know that, that is me. At the same time, I can say, I hear you, I see you, I am thinking, I am feeling, because chidabhasa reflects because of the reflection of consciousness in the mind and the sense organs. And so I can have all of this sense of knowership and enjoyership, and at the same time be awake to my own swarupa, which is not doing anything at all. And that also is aparoksha. So he goes on, he wants to make his point, because this is a place of confusion. So he goes on to another subject here, but comes back to this. Rajugnane pikam padi, rajugnane pikam padi, shanai revo pashamyati, shanai revo pashamyati, punar mandantakare sa. Punarmandantakaresa Rajukshipto Ragipavet Rajukshipto Ragipavet Raju Jnane Api Kampa Adihi Shanaihi Eva Upashamyati Punar Manda Andakaresa Rajuhu Kshipta Uragipavet. He says, even when there is knowledge of the rope, rajugnana, jnane api. Even when there is knowledge of the rope, the kampa adi, the kampa means shaking and trembling. Say you saw a snake on a rope and you saw it was a cobra or something. You're shocked and you're trembling. So even once you gain knowledge of the rope, this trembling, etc., trembling, worry, fear, shanaihi eva, only slowly upashamyati. It only slowly subsides. Right? Because your body and your whole mind and everything has had a big reaction. So now you're in this big reaction. And then your friend points out, hey, that's not a snake, that's only a rope. And you see, oh, it's only a rope. And yet, you know, it takes a while for the physical reaction and the emotional reaction to settle down. It doesn't happen right away. It has to subside. It slowly subsides once you see the rope, once you gain knowledge of the rope. And then he says, and then not again and again, punar, manda andakare, you know, like a mandakara, andakara means in the darkness. Manda means it's not that dark. It's like dusk, kind of dusk out. It's not a full darkness. So in the dusk, sa rajuhu, that rope, bhaved, again can become the urugi. Urugi is a snake. That same rope, right, can once again be seen as the snake. Say this rope was kshipta, it means been kind of tossed. The rope has been tossed to another place, and now that rope is lying there as a snake, right? That same rope can again be mistaken as a snake, right? Because same situation, right? Person is walking around again. It's dusk out. It's the light is very dim. Again, that same mistake can take place, and then the friend has to come and say, "Hey, once again, buddy, once again, you know, that's only a rope. Please look and see." So now let's go on. Evam arabdha bhogopi, evam arabdha bhogopi. Shanai shamyati no hatat, shanai shamyati no hatat, bhogakale kadachittu, bhogakale kadachittu, marjoham iti bhasate, marjoham iti bhasate. Evam arabdha bhogaha api, shanaihi shamyati na'u hatat. So you just say no, hatat. Bhogakale kadachit tu marchaha aham iti bhasate. So here, I'll go back a little bit probably to the previous verse, but let's look at this one first. In this way, evam, in the same manner, the arabdha bhogaha api, while the enjoyment of the prarabdha is taking place, the arabdha, the bhoga, bhoga means the experience. The prarabdha, the bhoga, literally means enjoyment, but enjoyment means any kind of enjoyment, positive or negative. So this prarabdha karma, right, is going on, and so you are experiencing the prarabdha karma as it takes place. So while this prarabdha karma is being experienced, the experience of it, the bhoga of it, shanaihi shamyate naha hatat. So this bhoga, let's take this as the enjoyment. This enjoyment of the prarabdha karma, sukha, its capacity to give sukha and dukkha, right? Its capacity to give pleasure and pain, that only slowly subsides. You gain knowledge, but the capacity of the prarabdha karma to give pleasure and pain, bhoga, sukha and dukkha, it subsides only slowly. Right? Just like the trembling of the snake. Right? You see it's a rope. You know it's a rope. But you had a reaction to the snake. Right? So So like that, you have lifetimes of experiencing this creation in such a way that it gives you pleasure and pain. Certain events make you happy. Certain other situations make you unhappy. So your relationship to the creation is one that is causing sukha and dukkha continually. Sukha, more sukha, more sukha, dukkha, more dukkha, more dukkha. It's gradiated, right? Gradiated series of experiences based upon the way you're relating to the creation. Now, you realize as jnanam takes place, it's just like Swamiji's animal crackers. You know the animal crackers? Swamiji, you know? If the mother has some children, the mother has, you know, bought from the store a box of animal crackers. You know those graham crackers? So there's a box of animal crackers. And so she's going to give them out to her kids and all her kids' friends. And so as she starts to pass them out, the kids start raising their hand. I want the giraffe, you know. I want the horse. No, I want the monkey. You know, I want the dog. I want the cat. And so the poor mother's looking through, trying to get the giraffe and trying to get the horse, trying to get the monkey and the cat and the dog and all these. And I want the elephant. I want the elephant. Looking through, oh, I'm sorry, the elephants are all gone. No, no, I have to have the elephant. And the giraffes are gone too. I'm sorry, they're all gone. So the children are all so distraught. They're distraught because they're not getting the form. They're not getting the nama-rupa that they need, even though all are exactly the same. All of them are graham crackers. That's it. There's only graham cracker there. That's all that is there. It's the same situation here. There's only one ananda. I am that ananda. There are not two sources of ananda, only one. It has nothing, the ananda has absolutely nothing to do with the object except being the equally, the non-dual, undivided, impartial, no parts ananda that is the truth of every single graham cracker. Right? The ananda that is the truth of every single nama-rupa and which is my own being. And so even when I know this, even when, not know it just intellectually, I know it. I am my own swarupa. I am absolutely clear. Nevertheless, at times I find myself putting out my hand for the giraffe instead of the elephant. And being upset if the elephant's not there. Still that slowly. So what he says is here, this enjoyment, this relationship to the prarabdha, right? It subsides, shamyati, it subsides slowly and not by force. You can't make it subside. Right? You can't, hatha means by force. It subsides by itself slowly. And then he gives another thing, another problem that happens with this. And he says, and even at the time of the enjoyment, that this enjoyment, sukha, dukkha, is taking place, he says, kadachit to, he's making a confession here. Sometimes, he says, sometimes it even appears, marjaha aham, I am immortal. I feel myself as a jiva. I relate to myself, marjaha aham. What he means is, I take myself to be this body, mind, sense organs. I fall into samsara. You know? Swamiji talked about this in, if you've ever listened to some of these dialogues we have with Swamiji on the website. He talks about that you can fall into this samsara where the sukha and dukkha become real, and as they become real, I become a samsari. I become a jiva who's relating to that as though it's real. And this process is something that only subsides over time. Because it's asking too much of the mind, really. It's asking too much of the mind to gain this knowledge, to see clearly. You see clearly, but you have not only this lifetime, you have beginningless lifetimes of jivatvam, of myself being somebody who suffers and enjoys at the hands of my experience. My suffering and my happiness is held, is controlled by my experience, the relationship to my experience. It means all of these things as the prarabdha unfolds. Remember they say the prarabdha, 50% sukha, 50% dukkha? That means like it or not, the universe will provide experiences for you that are meant to be pleasing, and will provide experiences for you that are meant to cause pain. They're designed for that. And so the only way, in fact, that they're not going to cause you pain is if you have a certain level of vairagya toward the experience, sukha or dukkha itself, if you have a level of vairagya. And the reason that you have vairagya is not the vairagya of the mumukshu, but the vairagya of the jnani. The vairagya of the mumukshu is the one who realizes that this creation cannot give me the happiness that I seek, and so therefore, Bhagavan, please save me. That's the vairagya of the mumukshu. The vairagya of the jnani is the same in that the person, the jnani, realizes this universe, of course it can't give me the ananda that I seek because it doesn't belong to the universe, it is my own swarupa. And so when I recognize it as my own swarupa, my mind enjoying myself, where I am the source of the mind's ananda, it can then, in a sense, happily accommodate sukha and dukkha. Enjoying the ananda of myself, let me say it put like this, enjoying the ananda or the fullness of myself, I have titiksha. I can accommodate the universe. I can accommodate the dukkha in the universe. Titiksha means I don't expect the universe to always be working to make me happy. I know that the universe is not like that. I know that there's going to be difficult times in life because that's the nature of life. And when those difficult and unpleasant times are there, it's not that for the jnani they become fun or wonderful or that they make everybody else miserable. But it's not like that. They're unhappy times. They're unhappy times, but I have a titiksha, and I can accommodate those unhappy times because my ananda is not at stake. And so then, therefore, I have to objectively deal with the unhappy times, and enjoy the happy times and objectively deal and do what needs to be done in the unhappy times. That's how we do it. As the mind matures in this knowledge, has time, more and more time being with this knowledge, that beggar that's, Swamiji tells this kind of a nice story. There was a prince who was meant to be a king, prince that was meant to become king. That prince was kidnapped when he was a little boy. And then he was taken into some slum areas and he grew up mistreated and kind of abused and grew up very impoverished as a little beggar boy. And he spent many, many years, his young years and his teen years, as a beggar with no money, just with rags in India. And then he was discovered. He was discovered as the son of the king, and he was brought home to his palace and reunited with his family, and bathed and be put on his princely robes. And now, as time went on, he was being now groomed, over the months he was now being taken care of and groomed to become the king and to learn his princely duties and all of that. And so one day they were traveling down the city streets, and there was some sort of affair that was what was happening, and there was a fellow who was who was selling or giving away, who was giving away some of these laddus. Laddus are these wonderful sweets, Indian sweets. And this guy was giving away some laddus, and the prince from a distance saw, of course he really loved laddus, he saw. And so he went tearing up with his hand to get the laddus. And all of a sudden, you know, then he remembered who he was. And he kind of crashed and scampered away, very, very embarrassed. Well, that's us. You know, a person gains knowledge, you know. It's not just a superficial knowledge, you know. And yet your hand goes out for that laddu. And then you kind of just pull it back. That's the story that Swamiji says. So what he's doing is really, you know, acknowledging the force of the samsara. Just think about it. Lifetimes. Beginningless lifetimes until now. Number one. That's number one. That's pretty heavy duty right there. Number two is this world and this upadi, the body, the mind, the sense organs, are meant to be a samsari. You are meant to be a samsari. This is a samsari body, right? With sense organs and mind and organs of action, all meant to participate in the creation, right? And so, to recognize that this body, mind, sense organs, all of you upadis, are part of really part and parcel of one Ishvara, that has your being for itself, you know, and that being is the very ananda which all of the parts of the Samishti Upadhi seek. To really recognize that takes some time, because the samskaras, in spite of your knowledge, the samskaras are so profoundly thorough. They could not be more thorough. And so that's why this process of nishta takes place over some time. As you gain knowledge, your buddhi has knowledge, you have that recognition. All of these samskaras keep rising into the light of your knowledge. Right? And sometimes they're stronger than your knowledge, but your knowledge always will bring them back. So that's what he talks about. Brings back, or your knowledge will always bring back the reality. So that's what he says, something very nice in this next verse. Naitavata paradhena tatvajnanam vinashyati jivan mukti vritam nedam kintu vastu stitikalu na etavata aparadhena tatvajnanam vinashyati jivan mukti vritam na idam kintu vastu stitihi kalu. He says, by mistake, na etavata aparadena. Etavata aparadena. By a mistake like this. Aparada is like a mistake or an error. By such an error like this. He says, tatvajnanena na vinashyate. Your knowledge of the truth isn't destroyed or even hurt. Your knowledge of the truth is not hurt. It's not destroyed. Vinash means to destroy. It's not destroyed by a mistake like this. Or you're reaching out your hand, you know, and saying you're feeling like you're immortal and getting very involved in the sukha and dukkha. He says, your knowledge, the knowledge of your truth, it's vinashyati, na vinashyati, it's not hurt. It's not destroyed. It doesn't come to an end by a mistake like this. Because you think, you know, here I did have knowledge, but now look what I've done.
Yeah.
Now look what I've done. Does this mean I don't know? So this is what he's addressing here. Does it mean I don't know now that I'm acting like I'm a totally ignorant? So Am I totally ignorant then, since I'm acting like that? He says, no. Your knowledge is not the knowledge of the truth, the tattva jnanam, your knowledge. It is not destroyed by these type of mistakes, right? By errors in your behavior like this. He goes like this. This jivan mukti vritam na idam. This is not a vow of jivan mukti. You say like this. I am going to take a vow to be a jivan mukta. This is my vow. This is my vrata. It is my vrata, my vow, to be a liberated person. He says, this isn't about taking a vow. Self-knowledge is not taking a vow, he says, kintu rather, vastu stitihi kalu. It is indeed the abiding in reality. The vastu is the reality. The vastu stitihi means the vastu swarupa. It means it is the recognition of your own nature. You don't take a vow to be a jivan mukta. You are a jivan mukta. That is the very swarupa, you're abiding. It's the vastu stitihi. It's the abiding in the reality of what you are. Remember, the tattva jnanam. Jnanam removes ignorance. It doesn't make you into a jivan mukta. Living, the jivan mukta means living liberated. You don't become a jivan mukta. You recognize that your nature is liberated. We say jivan mukta because now that I've recognized that, here I'm still living. Jivan means living. Here I'm still living. I still have this upadhi. I still have this body, the mind, the sense organs. Here I am. The upadhi is there. Just like an ajnani. I'm still here. I'm living. And yet, I am liberated. Muktaha. So now, what does that mean? Does it mean that the body has become liberated? No, it still dies. Right? Does it mean the mind has become liberated? Not in the sense of its own nature. The mind goes on changing. The eyes go on seeing. The ears go on hearing. These things are by their nature bound. The mind by its nature is bound. But what happens for this jivan mukta is that I recognize, because of jnanam, I recognize that the self, the very swarupa, the very reality of the body, the mind, the sense organs, is free. I recognize that the aham, the I, the content of I, the sat-chit, the being that I am, this being, the conscious being, the me, the one that illumines the mind, that illumines the sense organs, the self, myself, is free. That's what I recognize. And that's the swarupa. That self that is free is the swarupa. It's not a vow to be free. I don't make a vow to be free. I recognize that I am free. That's jnanam. No mistake can take that away. No mistake can do anything about that. I just recognize I made a mistake. Oh my God, I stuck my hand out like a beggar. Okay. That doesn't do anything to my own nature. And so what he's saying is that there's some really wonderful arguments about it in these lectures that Swamiji gets into.
What lecture?
These dialogues that we have on the site. It's something like this. Well, actually, he's dealing exactly with this. Say you have knowledge, and you're behaving like an ajnani. You have knowledge, definitely. Not partial knowledge, you have knowledge. Mm-hmm. You're behaving like an ajnani. Which is going to last? Which behavior is going to... Will your knowledge outlast your ignorant behavior? Think that you're ajnani, you have knowledge, and now you're behaving as though you don't. What's going to last? Only your knowledge will last, right? Your knowledge is illumining the behavior that goes against your knowledge. And so this is exactly what he's saying here. Your knowledge, because it's knowledge, you have to think, what does it mean for, what's knowledge? Knowledge means that which is what we call pramat, that which is true to the vastu, true to the reality. That is knowledge. What is ajnanam, ignorance? Ignorance is that which is not true to the real. Say, what is a mistake or an error or a misconception? If you say error, mistake, misconception, we can say these are all products of ignorance. Right? What does that mean? It means it's not true to the object. Why is it not true to the object? There's some ajnanam there. You've made a mistake about something. You've committed an error about something. And there's a misconception. What causes that error is the ajnanam, right, of what is actually there. That's what ignorance is about. It covers up what is actually there. Avarana covers up what is actually there. And then allows you to mistake it, project something else on it. That's the same thing with a snake. The rope is covered, and so we can have a snake. So any mistake is like that. What is actually the reality is covered up. And then that allows for the projection of something else. Now, what is going to last? The reality or the projection? Now, say you have knowledge. You have self-knowledge. You know the reality. You know yourself. And your mind, because of some scars, is sticking out its hand. Because of some scars. Are the samskaras going to... What is stronger? Where's the strength? Where's the what we call bulava? What has the strength? Well, what has the strength is what is real, not what is not real. And so what is real will always outlast what is not real. And so, therefore, this tattva jnanam can't be destroyed. It can't be destroyed by your mistake. Because your mistake, right, has its roots in ajnanam. And it's not true to the reality. So he says, then he says this, this jivan mukti, being a jivan mukti, jivan mukti means the state of being liberated while alive. This is not a vow that you take. You know? It is the reality. It is the tattva. When you say tattva jnanam, the knowledge of the truth, this is the truth, right? So this is the truth of which you have knowledge. And so it's not about taking a vow and then, oh my gosh, I've broken my vow. Now I've taken this vow to be living liberated, and now, you know, I've broken the vow. So this isn't a vow to be broken, okay? So it gives another example. Deshamopi shirastadam. Deshamo pi shirastadam rundam buddhva naroditi rundam buddhva naroditi shiro vranastu masena shiro vranastu masena shanai sham yati no tada shanai sham yati no tada deshamaha api shirastadam rundam buddhva naroditi Shiro vranaha tu masena shanaihi shamyati no tada na u tada. He says, even, you know, the tenth man, the tenth man story, even the dashamaha api, even the tenth man, shirastadam rudan, who was lamenting the blow to his head. This is the story. Remember the tenth man crosses the river with the ten boys and notices one is missing. Counts all nine, one is missing. And then he gets so upset. He's running up and down. They're all running up and down looking for the tenth man. He gets so upset that he goes and wailing and crying, he beats his head on a tree. Woe is me, woe is me, woe is me, like that. But it's not a hand, it's a tree. And so as he's beating his head on the tree, it gets really bruised and hurt and, you know, wounded. So here he says, this tenth man lamenting, you know, the blow on the lamenting the blow on his head. But then he was lamenting. Now he was crying about this blow on his head. But then Buddha no roditi. But then once having known that the tenth man lives, then he doesn't cry anymore. Right? He stops crying. He's been crying and wailing because, you know, he's hurt himself. But then once he knows, it doesn't matter to him anymore that his head hurts. It doesn't matter at all because he's so happy. Like he feels so relieved, so happy that the tenth man is alive. So what he says, but then he says, but now he's still in this predicament. So he says, Shiro Vranahatu, but the wound on his head, right? He's found out the tenth man is alive. He's so happy. You know, he doesn't cry anymore about the wound. He doesn't care. However, the wound on his head only comes to an end very slowly in about a month's time. He says, takes about a month, masena. In a month, shanaihi, slowly, shamyati, it goes away. The wound on his head goes away slowly, maybe in a month or so, right? Maybe in a month or so. Then he says, no, tada, it doesn't, not then and there. You know, when he discovers I'm the tenth man, he discovers that. Tenth man is not drowned in the river. Everything is fine. There is no problem at all. And yet he has this big wound on his head. And that wound on his head doesn't just disappear. That wound on his head has to heal. And it heals slowly. And so for us, we gain knowledge and everything is fine. We see no problem, all is good. I am the very Ananda that I seek. You know, I am free from time. My being is eternal. I am the whole. I see it all. It's all no problem anymore. And yet, I have all of these samskaras. You know, all of these, there's damage that's been done. There's damage that's been done. And that damage, you know, those samskaras, they heal themselves over time. Do one more. Dashamam ritila bhena. Dashamam ritila bhena. Jato harsho vranapyatam. Jato harsho vranapyatam. Tirodhate muktilabha. Tirodhate muktilabha. Tata prarabdha dukkitam. Tata prarabdha dukkitam. Dashama amriti labhena. Jata harshaha vranapyatam. Tirodhate muktilabha tata prarabdha dukkitam. So he gives the darshtanta to the preceding example. He says, dashama amriti labhena jataha harshaha. He says, the elation, this is just as the elation which is born by the attainment of the amriti, the non-death of the tenth man, right? Discovering that the tenth man has not died, just as that elation, which has been brought about by that discovery that the tenth man has not died, how that tirodhate overwhelms the pain of the wound, vrana vyatam. The vrana is the pain, the pain of the wound. Okay, so jata is the pain, the vrana is the wound. So just as the elation born of the discovery that the tenth man is not dead, how that elation kind of overwhelms and puts to the side the pain of the wound. Similarly, tata muktilabha, the gain of liberation. The gain of liberation overwhelms the sorrow, the dukkita of the prarabdha. It overwhelms and pushes to the side the sorrow of the prarabdha. This the sukha dukkha of the prarabdha doesn't stop. You know, it's not as though life becomes swargaloka. The dukkha remains, but amidst the dukkha, I am free. The ananda, my swarupa, isn't subject to the dukkha. My mind and body can be subject to the dukkha. It's a difficult situation. I have to deal with it. You know, but I am free. And that joy, the harsha, the joy of that, of my own, the joy of being free overwhelms and puts to the side the dukkha of the prarabdha. It doesn't get rid of the dukkha of the prarabdha. But, you know, what is the dukkha to the prarabdha compared to the two jnanam, to the recognition that I am the whole and the ananda of my own swarupa? So, it's nice. Let's stop there. Yeah, go ahead, Johnny. Om Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate. Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi. Harihi Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha. Harihi Om.
So then we shouldn't become discouraged when we have some little bouts of suffering, then, huh?
No, you can just smile.
Smile.
All is well in spite of my suffering. In another place, Vidyaranya says to a student, you know, it's too late. You know, you've already taken this birth. Mm. You've already taken this birth, and so, you know, you have to live it out. That's the reality. Nothing you can do about it. Mm. So, you know, be a good sport. You have knowledge now, you don't have to take another one. That was his kind of, you know, you have knowledge now, you don't have to take another one, but it's too late for this one. This one, you're here, you have to do it. So.
Chapter 6, verse 25, I just looked at it and remember Shinai.
Oh, yeah, that's right, that's right. Yeah. That word's been coming.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Yeah.
What was that?
Shinai, slowly, slowly, or gradually, gradually. Yeah. We just added in another verse in the Gita.
That's encouraging.
Yeah.
But Carol, can you, you know, you did this scripture and all that. Can a person, dumb question, but can a person make a distinction between Atma and Chittabhasa then? I mean, Chittabhasa is just like the mind.
Because Chittabhasa, really, I think to really make it clear, I started to make it clear, but maybe didn't finish the job well. Say, like in the dream or imagination or this room. Some objects in the room reflect consciousness, some don't. Chittabhasa is what makes the difference between the objects that reflect consciousness and the objects that don't, the chittabhasa. It's really the sukshma sharira, the sattva rajas and tamas. What is the sattva? It's only the mind and the sense organs, really. Right? And for Ishvara, it's the sattva aspect of the entire samashti upadhi. But for the jiva, the sattva in the sukshma sharira is the mind and the sense organs, right? So now, there's a distinction between the mind and the sense organs, and then the sense organ, sense of touch, goes to this body that makes this body a point, an upadhi, a point of identification, right? So there's a difference between the jiva as a knower and the objects of knowledge. Like a rug can't be a knower. It can't have the experience of being a knower or an enjoyer or a hearer or a seer. It's because of the chittabhasa that that experience can be there, right? But at the same time, and so the chittabhasa, we say reflection of consciousness. Right? Because we're talking about sattva, really. Because that reflection of consciousness can be there, from the standpoint of the mind, I experience myself as the subject, the knower, right? The hearer, the seer. Whereas I also, at the same time, experience myself just as the self-evident consciousness that I am, which is not knowing, seeing, doing anything. It is just me. So right now you have, really, both experiences, and the knower, the experience of knowership and enjoyership, that's not going to go away. As long as the chittabhasa is there, as long as the prarabdha is there, once the jiva is disbanded, for the jnani, once the jiva is disbanded, then there's just the samashti upadhi. Right? So that's why the I am the whole. The samashti upadhi is there. The jiva upadhi is the one that's disbanded. And so that's no chittabhasa then, from the standpoint of the jiva upadhi. But as long as the jiva upadhi is there, chittabhasa is there. You see?
Yes.
That's why you, both things, yourself is not doing anything, and then knowership, seer, hearer, from the standpoint of the upadhi.
But then the jnani.
Jnani's aware of both.
They're aware of both, but they know that their true identity is not the doer, the knower.
That's right, because that is totally dependent on the upadhi.
Right. So is
thinker,
that like,
thinker is dependent upon the mind. Enjoyer dependent upon the manas on the mind. Seer dependent upon the eyes.
So is that like having two experiences then? I mean, is there...
It is two experiences in a sense, because it's you're differentiating, mm-hmm. you're differentiating your being from the upadhi. Mm-hmm. But the upadhi, if we look at the sattva, has knowership, you know, because knowing is hearing, all of these things. These experiences are all there. You can't say the experience isn't there. As long as the upadhi is there, that experience will be there.
But it's even mukta, you know, you talk about like the eye lands on the self.
Uh-huh.
So the eye lands
on the self. Yeah.
Right. So the eye lands on the self. But so then you're speaking, so then you can't really say, I am a knower. I mean, it's kind of like you're saying that.
From the standpoint of the mind.
But you're saying it like to speak normally.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah, but the sense of, the subject-object relationship is still there. No, I don't mistake the Atma as a knower or a seer. Mm-hmm. However, in here, in this Vyavahara, this subject-object relationship is there. Like, I know you. Now I can say, that's from the standpoint of the upadhi, right? But I'm still identified with myself as a knower, and then you are the known. I'm not identified with the known. Just in terms of Vyavahara, just in terms of empirical reality, that doesn't mean that I take my being to be a knower.
See, I guess I have some confusion around this, because I thought that the knowership, the jnani knows, the jnani, it's like, okay, the eye lands on the Atma,
mm-hmm.
then the knowership, doership, enjoyership really belongs to Ishvara.
Does.
That's what I thought.
Yeah, I know, but as long as you have this upadhi, this whole thing is mithya. This body, mind, sense organs is part and parcel of Ishwara. Okay? We know that. Okay? Nevertheless, it is my sense of self as a jiva doesn't extend past the skin. Right? And so this is my mind, not your mind. I know you. This is all within mitya. But the mitya experience is here. It's mitya, but the mitya experience is here. Like say, it's easy to say this whole world that I'm experiencing through my sense organs is mitya. Right? And its truth is the satyam. Its truth is Brahman. But now we have to look at this whole world that's being experienced. In this world that's being experienced, there is the knower known dichotomy. Enjoyer enjoyed. Hearer heard. That's all part of the mitya. Right? So what are you identified with in this mitya? You'll be identified with the knower, the hearer, the enjoyer. Right? Not with the known. I'm talking just, pretend like you're just a total ajnani. As an ajnani,
That's
just
easy.
A person, you're identified with the upadi, not with what you know. You wouldn't say, I'm the painting. You would say, I'm the space, I'm the rug. You say, I'm this person, the knower, I'm a knower, I'm a conscious being, right? You can say that because of the chittabhasa. Now you know that, chittabhasa. You know the nityatva of it. You know I am the subject and the object, both. Right? But that doesn't stop this experience.
Mm.
Mm. Right? And at the same time that I recognize and this experience, I'm at the same time recognize myself, the self-evident nature of my being, which is not a knower, which is not a doer, and that's also self-evident.
Mm.
The me. This me is not doing anything. It's just self-evident, conscious being, whole. And there's this mitya reality, where I'm a knower, a seer, an enjoyer, and you're all known. In other words, the duality that's experienced from this, as an ajnani, the subject-object duality that's caused by the chittabhasa, that subject-object duality doesn't go away once you gain knowledge. It just becomes mitya. And the self-evident nature of yourself is known, is recognized.
But the jnani with nishtha will know that the subject and object are the same.
That's right, but still experience subject and object.
Yeah, they'll still experience it, but they'll know the truth of it.
Yeah. And they'll recognize the truth of it, too.
Right.
While experiencing
the
subject-object duality, you also recognize the self-evident nature of yourself as the truth of both, and that's also a paroksha.
And that's easy. I mean, once the knowledge is there,
it's easy. Yeah,
it's not a problem.
Because yourself has been differentiated.
Mm-hmm.
You recognize the oneness of your being, the non-action of your being. You're not doing anything, you simply are. And nothing's away from that. And the subject-object duality that you experience is not away from that. Yeah.
It's clear.
Oh no, we have an exodus. See you later.
Because the buddhi is sort of not in control, that it's not, there's another part of the mind that's sort of running the show?
It can be just habitual. And when they say, you know, you can reach out your hand for the laddu, but what the point is in that example is that this prince has actually taken himself again to be the beggar. You know? So you can reach out your hand for the laddu as the prince, but what if you're reaching out your hand for the laddu as the beggar? Right? That means that there are those samskaras, those habitual, unconscious now ways of behaving just took over. You know, they took over, and then your buddhi comes back and says, oh, wait a minute, I'm the prince. See what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So the buddhi then, the knowledge that samskara, that desire had overwhelmed temporarily your knowledge. And then your knowledge comes back. Rises again. Does that make sense?
Yeah. So it sounds like the samskaras don't belong to the buddhi. They belong to some other part of the
mind. Yeah, that's true. The samskaras, I'd say the samskaras are what we call the manas, because they're also the chitta, the memory, all of the memories. And also the manas, sometimes they put all of the emotions, you know, in the manas. And just the fluctuating mind and the emotions. But maybe the samskaras actually go in on the chitta. The chitta plus the manas. But the buddhi, it's not going to be the buddhi, because the buddhi is your knowledge. You know? The buddhi has knowledge, but that knowledge gets overwhelmed by these tendencies and habitual thinking and samskaras and emotional reactions and traumas, unconscious material. And then, but the buddhi is really the more subtle and the stronger. And so the buddhi will outlast. Your knowledge will outlast the tempest.
Even if it's lifetime? I mean, you know, you made it sound like
those. The knowledge is, now that you have knowledge, the knowledge is permanent.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Before, the knowledge wasn't there. Now the knowledge is there. And so your mind can't keep up its samskaras for that long, actually. You just think about it. You have a really strong desire, and how long does that last? You really want something, or a situation is really difficult, you know, and you're all engaged in it. How long does it last? How long does your intensity around it last? It doesn't. And as it starts to subside, then your knowledge rises up, you know, and then pulls the whole thing back into place again. And as it does that, it gains strength over that particular tendency, that particular samskara that had such strength, you know, to pull you along. Once the buddhi gets a hold of it, then it loses its strength. The next time it won't be as strong. Right? Because the buddhi has already, with its knowledge, has already experienced that little situation. And so this is the second time now. So the buddhi is stronger in reference to it. It's used to it. Then it comes a few more times, and eventually, you know, it doesn't, because that's not where your value is. Because that situation is painful, where your knowledge isn't painful. Your knowledge is peaceful. You know, your knowledge, from the standpoint of your knowledge, you're strong and you're stable and all is well. And no, nothing can take that away. That's the reality. And so when these tempests come,
mm-hmm.
they as though take it away. But they can't take away the reality. That's why it says, this Jivan Mukti, you know, this is not a vow that you've taken.
Yeah.
It's the reality of yourself. And nothing can take that away. Nothing can destroy it. So temporarily, you know, you get swept away. Your mind gets swept away. But it's only a temporary occurrence. And your buddhi will always bring you back to what is true. And that's the great thing about it. The self is true. It's real. It's your real nature. And so it will always be there waiting for it. The tempest is to settle down.
That's a relief.
And then as you become used to your knowledge over time, you know, then even if that tempest is happening, you're there. Nothing's happened to you. And then after a while, the tempest doesn't happen. That's just maturing. That's what they do. This Paripakwa from the verse. We were just doing a Gita verse in chapter 6. You know, this maturing of the mind.
Not the buddhi.
Or that one is approach on the buddhi.
Not the buddhi, but the maturing of the manas.
Yeah, the samskaras and all of the complexes and painful ways of reacting to the world drop off in the light of your knowledge. It takes some time.
Takes longer than a month.
Yeah, I thought the same thing. You know? I thought
that was only for the bump on the head.
I thought 2 months maybe.
It doesn't matter how long it takes.
No, it's not.
Well, in terms of one lifetime versus infinite lifetimes, and you know, it's such an enjoyable ride because as your mind matures, as your mind, every little bit of maturity is an increase in your own shanti, your own strength, your own ananda. And so it's a very, very pleasurable, you know, after the first year or two when you have all of this garbage coming out that overwhelms you.
But it is rewarding. I mean, it's
very rewarding to watch, you know, yourself mature, your mind enjoy more shanti, more happiness, more strength, more just sense of well-being. It's like that sense of well-being is like the rising sun. They even use it in Sample and Katha Upanishad said that's why. Knowledge is like the sun coming up, which means it gives that appearance of like the sunrise, because as your mind matures and settles down, you know, it just becomes much lighter, much stronger, and more stable. Because the self is stable. The mind recognizes the stable self as itself. So it becomes stable. It's always been stable. But it recognizes the stable self as itself, and then it becomes stable. Because you can't get rid of the self. Yeah.
You're trapped.
You are. You are that. All right. We should stop. I better.